Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hi. We're on the air. I didn't do my intro music, apparently, and this is Time to Love. I'm Lydia. I am your lighthouse of love, and hopefully I am guiding, motivating, teaching you to loving, guess who? Yourself. Yes, it's always about loving yourself, because that's where it begins. And today I have a special show for you because I am live at the Boulder Potters Guild. And I just want to say that being amongst over 40 artists, there's actually 46 different artists showing their work here, is just, it feels really good here. There are is beautiful things to look at. It fills the senses. You can touch pottery. That's what's so nice about it. You can see it. You can enjoy it. We have not only beautiful functional ware like bowls and mugs, but we also have sculpture here. We have jewelry here. We have some woodworking here. It's absolutely one of the best shows. They just keep getting better, folks. So if you haven't been to the Boulder Potters Guild show and you are in the area, and that includes all along the Front Range, today we're going to be here till 6 o'clock. We're at the Boulder County Fairgrounds, and you can follow the signs and find us pretty easily. And we are here till 6 o'clock today, and then tomorrow we are here from 10 o'clock until 4 o'clock. And then we get to tear down our displays. But hopefully we won't have much to bring home. There is such a selection here, thousands and thousands of pots. It'd be very interesting to know how many. But with 40-something artists, there is a whole heck of a lot, that's for sure. I'm going to be walking around, and I will be actually looking at the pottery. I'm sorry I don't have a live video feed. That would be so much fun. But I don't have that. And I'm going to see if I can find some artists and maybe ask them some questions because that would be fun too. Now, how does pottery relate to loving yourself? Well, that's a really good question. But for myself, pottery is an outlet, and it is a very creative outlet. We've talked before in several shows how creativity helps you love yourself. It's an expression. It's a way to express yourself. My most favorite medium is clay, and I just I love it because it's so responsive. You touch it, and it does something. I work on the wheel predominantly, but here at the Guildvale, there are all kinds of different styles and techniques that we use. I'm going to start out with looking at one of our newest potters, Molly Poor. Molly Poor comes from North Carolina area, and what I love about her display is she has a photograph, and it's a black and white photograph, and she is asleep in a little baby carrier, and her mother is working on the wheel, and she has a little caption, "My first lesson." Mother and father are potters, and so she's been doing this for quite a long time, although she's very young. She's in her 20s. She has been doing some soda firing, and that is a process where actually the soda helps glaze pieces, and also salt firing. And her pottery is very unique. It's got some really nice warm brown tones, white tones, peach tones, and then she has a really nice little flare she'll carve into the clay and put colors on there. I really like it. There's no pottery here that I don't love. We also have a potter here, Luann Burke, who is actually legally blind, and she does sculpture. And it's absolutely amazing what she does with her sculpture. The expressions, she does faces, she does people, she does animals. I really enjoy her work. She has a large piece here of a woman looking up to the sky, and it's It's got a little primitive. It's just absolutely beautiful, though. I really, really like it. We also have a new potter, Sarah Swoboda, and she just joined, and she just moved here. So she doesn't have a lot of pots with us, but it's she has a lot of raku, and it's very interesting forms, very, very organic. Also going towards the modern organic form, simple white and black pottery. And we have Marie Martini. She actually, I fired some of her pieces, and she does some extruded forms. And if you don't know what extruded is, it is a clay, and you load the clay into a chamber, and then you pull it, and it goes, you have different shapes of it. So that is very interesting. She's doing that, and she actually got me interested in it. I did some of that also for the sale. Janet Newsom is next to Marie, and Janet is one of our founding members. And her husband was a famous architect, and he actually designed our building that we built in Boulder. And she does houses. I think she got more into the architecture and through him, and she does really sweet little houses. I absolutely love them. Another founding member, or close to founding member, I could have that wrong, is Diane Hackett. And Diane has kind of moved out of clay a little bit. She does a little bit of clay, but she does a lot of fused glass. So she has some platters here that are not only beautiful, but actually pretty reasonable. She has little dishes, platters, earrings, that type of thing, candle holders, beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. You know, if you couldn't, guys, I love pottery. And people think it's really silly, but I buy pottery. I've already bought several pieces, and I might buy a few more. We'll see. We also have another. We've just recently gotten an infusion of new potters. Some of them are young, and some of them are not so young, but not old by any chance. Anyway, we got a new member, Don Cox. I think we are really blessed to have him. He's doing soda firing, too, high fire soda firing, and he is he's a master at the brush stroke and has a kind of an Asian flair with his brush stroke. He does bamboo, a lot of pine trees and pine cones, but his work is beautiful. I haven't picked anything out yet, but I'm going to have to do that. He also does, I have a mug of his, and I have one with a fish. And it's in that Asian style where he, it's just like the suggestion of a fish. It's not super detailed, but absolutely beautiful. Yeah. He is, he's going to do really well here. His work is just exquisite. And I hope to do a soda firing with him soon. Yeah. So we also have Joy Boston. And Joy Boston is an amazing potter. She loves to mix her colors. So her pieces are very colorful, as are mine. She does beautiful sculpture, kind of these creatures that are kind of, I want to say dragon-like, with places to put candles. Very interesting. She also does these kind of women type little sculptures with their faces to the sun, and then you can put them on a pole in your garden. And I do those. Joy is also a founder of Vox Feminista, if you are ever familiar with that troupe. Very, very talented, creative group of women. And she lives in Jamestown. Now, for those of you that are listening in other states or other places, Jamestown was really affected by the floods we had here in September. And there were about 600 people before the flood, 600 families, maybe not people, but 600 families. And after the flood, there's only 30. Really wiped out the town. Luckily, it didn't wipe out Joyce's house, but she feels very deeply for all friends and the people in her life that, you know, lost everything. And so she has been very elemental in making bowls and either giving them as thank you gifts, because many people after the floods came and worked really hard, and people came from Texas and all kinds of places in the South, that church groups came, and they didn't come to preach. They came to roll up their sleeves and stand in the mud and work really, really hard helping people. And, you know, Joy and I were just touched by that. And so she has been sending them bowls that she makes. And the Guild has helped Jamestown in donating money and donating clay and firings, and Joy has done a lot of the work. They also sell some of the bowls. She goes to children's groups, and the kids make the bowls, and then they sell them to raise money, and she gives it to the mayor. And anyway, you would love to see her work. And if you're anywhere in the area, I do want to tell you again that you've got to come down, because you don't have to buy anything. The really nice thing is it's free. You know, some art shows now cost to get in. I'm not into that at all. You know, art is for pleasure. It's not for profiting big corporations. And my friend Brent said that earlier today, something similar to that. We haven't the direct quote, but, yeah, she has said something similar to that, and I loved it. You know, art is to elevate us as a culture. And if you are not doing any art, first of all, I want to say, try something. You'll love it. And it can be as simple as writing down your feelings. That's an art form. Writing is an art form. And, you know, or, you know, maybe paint, pottery, glass, you know, crafts. I have so many friends who are into crafts, and they're like, I'm not an artist. And I'm like, the heck you aren't. Look at how you interpreted even some simple thing. I have a friend that does sewing. She sews for her children, and she's awesome. And her children are, you know, getting the direct benefit of their mother's love. She's putting time and effort into that. And I think that's part of what art is. Yes.
And the hands-on part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I remembered it now. It's purchase for art, either purchase for art or purchase for profit.
Right.
That's what it is. So, yeah.
Purchase for art, you know, is it you will support.
You're getting
local
something.
People.
Yeah, it's not some machine-made thing. It's somebody has infused their spirit into this artwork, and that's what you're getting. You're getting more than a piece or a bowl or a cup.
Oh, exactly. And I tell people, you know, I teach pottery, and I tell my students, and some of them have never thought of this. A lot of people have never thought of this, and that is a mug is so personal. And yesterday, or actually Thursday, I was late setting up, and so I was hurrying to get everything priced, and we opened up, and people were coming in, and, you know, and of course, you know me, I was talking to them, so I was telling them, you know, a lot of people were picking up mugs just to see how they would feel, see how first the handle felt. Then some didn't think of putting their lips, but I told them, I said, you know, that is so personal, you know, to put your lips on something to me is an intimate act. And I was kidding some of the women, but I'm very serious. And that is that, you know, you probably put your lips on your mug before you put your lips on your mate in the mornings, because, you know, you got to get that coffee, wake up a little bit, brush the teeth, and then go kiss your hubby. You know, maybe some of you. Although, I've been married forever.
That's brilliant.
Kids, whatever. But it is. You know, I mean, think about it. Your lips are probably touching your morning mug for your tea, you know, your water, your juice, whatever. And so why not make it a special experience? And, you know, I'm all about... you know, I know what it's like to not have money. And you know, you might think, well, I can't afford an artist, you know, mug. Yes, some of, if I've been doing pottery for 30 something years, 38 years, and you know, I, you know, mugs are now in their $20, and so that might be high for people. But if someone came to me and says, "Boy, I love your mug. I really would love to have one," I would. They could, you know, pull a couple weeds in my yard, and I'd give them a mug or whatever. I'd just hand them a mug. So. And this is for everyone, not just for my mugs. There's so many different kinds of mugs in the world. And, you know, if, you know, you might want to check out your next craft fair in your area and check out some mugs. You know, it, you'll be glad that you did because it is something you use it every day. It's a ritual. I was also, you know, I would overhear people and I heard a guy said, "Yeah, I broke my favorite mug." And I was like, "Yeah." I said, "That's what keeps potters in business." And he laughed. And I said, "No, really, it really does." And he's like, "Yeah, it definitely does." And I said, "But it's just such a, you know, I mean, when you're, when something that you use every day breaks, you do go out and replace it. If your coffee machine broke, you would go replace it. If your tea kettle was getting old and rusty like mine was recently, you would go out and get a new one. If your mug breaks, if your favorite mug breaks, go get a new one. Support the arts. Artists are so, they just appreciate it so much. And they appreciate when you tell them, you know, I bought your mug and I love it. It's my favorite. It's, you know, it just get, makes us feel really good. And standing in my booth the other day, I talked to a lot of people, and they're like, "Oh, I have a lot of your pottery," and that makes me feel really good. Yeah, we also have an artist. Yeah, I know. We also have one of my favorite artists. You know, they're all my favorite artists, so if you hear me say it over and over again, I have an artist friend here, Chris Conklin, and she is probably the hardest working gal in pottery, in at least in our guild. She supports herself totally on pottery, and she throws her work in porcelain, and then she covers it with a colored slip, which isn't a glaze. It's actually, she does it in the raw state. After she makes a, let's say, a bowl, she'll cover part of the bowl with a colorant, and then she carves into that colorant. And all of her pieces are hand-carved. This is not a machine. And then, this woman's crazy, she will put it in the kiln, a biscuit, then she brings it out, then she glazes it, and then usually just the inside because she puts it in a salt firing. And she's a perfectionist. A lot of times she'll say, "Oh, I'll see, this is gorgeous," and she goes, "No, it didn't turn out right." And I'm like, "Okay, you know, I wouldn't refire it," but she'll refire it. She's just a very conscientious and hardworking woman. She also combines grasses. Sometimes she weaves grasses around her pots, which is a really interesting effect. You guys, come on down. Come on down. Or give us a call because I'd love you, you know, I'd love to answer a question. Maybe you have a handmade piece and you're not, you don't really know much about it, and you might be able to describe it to me, and I might be able to answer that question. You can call in at area code 646-727-2914. So give me a call. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep yapping. I don't know if the chat room is alive, if you're listening.
Some people who have some of your artwork, Melody and Lydia, they were talking about how they love
Lydia.
Your...
I am Lydia. You mean Nina.
And Nina. I use people's names interchangeably. I could start using my dog's names for all of you in a minute. But anyway, I love my dog, so that's a good thing.
I know.
Anyway.
I know.
Saying that, let's see, Melody said she gets a little bit of love when she takes a sip out of your cups. And Nina said that she doesn't allow anyone else to touch the mug. But she also saying that with your swirl pattern, like if you hold it up to the light, you can see right through the swirl. And she said that's one of her favorite parts, the swirl at the bottom.
Yeah, it's a spiral. And the spiral is very, it's a symbol. The heart is a big symbol with me because I'm all about love. But the spiral is a big symbol to me because to me it's life. And life isn't like up or down. You don't just, hopefully we just don't keep evolving upward, but it's more a spiral. You know, we go around and we go up a little bit, and we go around and we go up a little bit. And so that's an important symbol to me, and I put it on the bottom of all my pieces pretty much, and I also put it when I sign my pieces, I dot the I with a spiral. I know that's a little corny, but at least it's not a heart. I've thought about the heart, but no, I like the spiral. So I dot my I in Lydia with a spiral. Yeah. Go ahead.
Lena says that she's going to get a mug from Lydia, and I say me too, but of course I just want everything you have. One of these days I'm going to get some real nefarious characters who somehow will do my bidding, and we're going to truck up there and with a semi just load up and go away. But if you find everything's gone, just it wasn't me.
Yeah, I know it wasn't you. You'd be the first
person. I was going
to
ask you a question if you don't mind.
Yes. No, I'd love it.
I was going to ask about, because it's been a long, long time since I've had anything to do with pottery. I was actually back in sixth grade. But you talk about the gas kilns, and you talk about the raku kilns and the salt, it says that there's three electric kilns and an electric test kiln that sheltered under an outdoor roofed area. Could you explain the differences for that? I mean, I don't know if anybody else cares, but it's interesting to me.
Oh, it's really interesting. And, you know, if you come out to the Boulder Potters Guild and I'm there, I'm really weird. I could even be in a hurry or be in a tizzy glazing. And if someone comes and visits and just goes, I just want to look around, I give them a tour. Because I feel, first of all, I feel blessed to be in Boulder because many people are educated about pottery. They've either taken a class or they have someone close to them that has done it or does do it. But electric firing is done in an electric kiln that runs on electricity. That's what is the source of heat. And it's amazing what you can do in an electric kiln, but they're smaller usually. We do have a few different sizes. And, you know, anymore, before you used to see electric fired pieces and you knew they were electric fired, a lot of your commercial firings, a lot of your commercial pottery is electric fired. You have more control because the atmosphere in the kiln is what's called oxidation. That's probably more than you'll ever need to know. But you know, you never know when this could come in handy. It could be on Jeopardy or something. So in the electric kiln, it's oxidation. And so you get brighter glazes, brighter colors, and it's more controllable. It's very controllable. Usually you can't mess up too much. But because a lot of people are going to electric firings, people have been working on making electric firing not look so plain. I used to say they kind of looked dead. They didn't have the depth that gas firings had. So, but that's all changing. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with electric firing, and sometimes I do electric firing. And maybe at some point in my life I will go to more electric firings just because of the ease of it. So gas firings are normally in fairly large kilns. Think of a very large refrigerator, and think of it at least two of them deep and maybe three of them deep. And what we do in a gas kiln is we can build up, and even in electric kilns, you have little posts. And so say you make mugs that are all real close to 6 inches high. That's a pretty big mug, but I make big mugs. So you use a post that's 6 inches, and it has a shelf, and you load the pots on there. And you do this, you want to keep, if you have a pot that is more, if closer to 4 inches, you want to save that for another level. You want to be efficient with your heat distribution in electric as well as gas. It's more important in gas, and I'll explain why. So So you build up the kiln, and also it costs money to run the electric kiln or the gas kiln. And so you want to be efficient. You want to pack that baby as tight as you can. So you build up all the shelves in this way. And my favorite kiln that I use a lot, it's not the largest gas kiln. It's right in the middle there, and I probably can fit, depending on size, 300 to 150 pots in,
wow,
or pieces, we'll say, in a kiln. Yeah. So it's, you know, there's a lot in there, and there's a lot of work in there. And one of the reasons to maybe go to an electric kiln is the ease of, you know, of you don't have to glaze all those pots. And, you know, my friends, Brenda gets an earful, Mel has gotten an earful, Nina knows me. When I'm glazing, it's just I dip pour and spray my glazes, and I put 3 to 4 glazes on each piece, and it takes me a long time, and I'm usually doing marathon nights when I'm doing my glazing. So I load them in the gas kiln, and the gas kiln, you have to start it up kind of slow, and then once it reaches a certain temperature, you want to shut off the oxidation. You do that by usually pushing in the damper. So what happens is the fire has to fight for air, and it ends up changing the color of your clay body. That's the first reduction.
Oh.
And if you're using a toasty brown clay, it'll give you a really nice feel. If you don't reduce properly, it might look kind of dead, a gray color. Now, I use porcelain, and porcelain is white, and I want it to be white. And if I get it thin enough, it is translucent. And so I'm not really reducing at that early stage for the clay as much as for maybe a finicky glaze. Some glazes really want you to start that reduction atmosphere. And what happens when you look in the kiln, and you've got to look in the kiln to see where the temperature is at, it's kind of, you can't see too well in the kiln. In an electric kiln, if you look in the kiln, you shouldn't be looking there without glass, welding glasses. But when you look into the kiln, you can actually see pots for part of the firing. You'll be able to see it. But when you start the reduction process, you're not going to see, you won't be able to see in through the kiln. It's very murky in there. In fact, sometimes to even see where the temperature is at, and I'm going to explain that in a second, I have to open the damper and look because I can't see in the kiln.
Huh.
So how I tell the temperature is pieces of formulated glaze that's formulated to melt at different temperatures, and these are called cones, C-O-N-E-S. And they start melting. And so you look in and you see that first one melting, and you know it's time to start reducing for the body. That's when you push in the damper. And I've been firing for a long time, and what works best for me is I push in that damper when cone 06 goes down, and I leave it throughout the firing. And I fire to, it goes, it can go 019, but 06 is the first cone that goes down for me. It goes 06, and then it goes up to cone 1, and then to cone 10, and I fire actually to cone 11. So that's where I'm firing to. So yeah.
And that's in the gas kiln.
And yeah. Cone 11 is approximately 2,350 degrees Fahrenheit, or in layman's terms, pretty darn hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, it's one of the highest temperatures. Now, you know, your porcelain that you buy in the store, if it's true porcelain, it's probably been high fired. And porcelain is very unique in that it can actually vitrify without a glaze on it. And firing to those temperatures, it definitely vitrifies. And that is, vitrifying means that it'll hold water. So it'll hold water without even any glaze on it at all. But glazing usually helps hold water. Mm-hmm.
Oh, awesome. Now, are you able to, because so when I saw the plate, I saw there's some pictures. If you go to the website, folks, lnbp2e.com, You can actually see some of the pictures of Lydia's pottery, and there were some light beige looking, so that was the porcelain pieces, the plate and mm-hmm. the mug that we have on there, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the porcelain. Now, does it stay that color, or is that before you fired it?
That was before I fired it. It actually turns more white.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I totally
that, and then there's the raku kiln that you mentioned. The raku kiln. Raku is a type of pottery that you pull out when it's about cone 06. So it's not that hot. It's not vitrified clay. It will, if you don't have a glaze on it properly sealed, it won't hold water. And I do have some raku pieces here. And pull it out when it's to temperature. The glaze starts melting, and we immerse it in combustibles. And so we smoke it, in other words. And what happens is it turns the glazes really interesting. It can be really metallic, or it can be white with a crackle, and the smoke gets into the crackle and becomes black. So it's like white glaze with black cracks in it. Very interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. And we also have a salt kiln. And that is where, at the end of the firing, and you can fire salt to any of the higher temperatures, and actually even low, but I don't think I'll go there. But the higher temperatures, and the salt actually becomes the glaze. The salt covers everything in the kiln and becomes the glaze, which is very, very cool.
So you sort of have salt in there, and then it almost vaporizes to everything that's in there.
It vaporizes for and layers everything. In fact, the things that you don't want to have salt on, you have to put a special coating. You also have to lift the pot up with little pads that will not absorb the salt glaze, and that way because if you don't do that, your pot will become part of the shelf. It'll just glaze right onto the shelf in the salt firings. So also very time-consuming, and like I said, Chris Conklin does the salt firing, as well as quite a few other potters here, but she, so you put them up, and so you've got to put these wads, we call them, on everything. So it's work. You know, all of this is work. In fact, I was sitting up next to one of my favorite potters. Like I said, they're all my favorite potters, Mary Lynn Schumacher. And she's like, yeah. She goes, yeah, I think we're crazy. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, but, you know, we do it because we are crazy. But we, you know, maybe it calms us down. I'm not really sure, but it is. It's so good for us. It's so good for everyone to work in clay. You know, my students, in fact, the first day of the sale, a few of my students came out and were, you know, buying so much. And that's what happens. And I think that's why Boulder is such a wonderful place for pottery, because a lot of people have tried it. And either you try it and you become an addict and you've got to do it, or you try it and you say, oh, man, that's too hard. I'll never be good at it. But then you appreciate the process. You know, you appreciate what goes in it. You know, just like you, Brenda, you know, you've talked before about glass blowing, you know, and, you know, I know that because you're no longer doing it, soon enough for your new house in Bainbridge, you will be buying, you know, you'll be a real patron, a really real supporter of glass blowers. You'll probably get some beautiful light fixtures in glass or wall hangings or whatever. So, you know, when you know that process, when you know what goes into it, you no longer say things like $25 for a mug. Well, there's a lot into a mug. You know, not only is there the forming of the piece, then you just have to trim a little bit off. Then you have to put a handle on it. And if you've ever tried to pull a handle for a mug, it's work. And I tell my students, you'll be good after you pull about 100 handles. That's when you start getting good. So, you know, you have to make 100 mugs for 100 handles. There's a bit of work in it. And then you have to load it into the kiln, fire it once, then you have to pull it out, then you have to glaze it, then you have to load it into the kiln and fire it again. And I've done some marathon firings. My kiln, my favorite kiln, takes about 8 to 10 hours to fire, and some kilns that are bigger might take 10 to 12 hours to fire. And, you know, this is you constantly looking at it, being around a hot, you know, object that's got lots of fire going on in it, and it's just work, you know. My sister is here from Chicago. In fact, she has jewelry here, and she has some beautiful jewelry here. There are, I think we got about 8 jewelers here. Some of them are potters that do jewelry. One is a young daughter, 16-year-old daughter of one of the potters, and she's doing jewelry. And so we have a fine selection of jewelry here. Come on down and buy some jewelry. Look at the jewelry. Enjoy the jewelry. It's gorgeous. But anyway, my sister's here from Chicago, and, you know, she was here helping me set up, and she was like, we were both wiped out. We were wiped out, and she was going to come the next morning, and I went into her room to wake her up, and she was sleeping pretty soundly, and I didn't have the heart to wake her up, because if she was on the other foot, I hope she couldn't wake me up. So I came, and I worked from like 8 in the morning until 3 o'clock. I didn't get back to the house till 3 o'clock, and I worked the whole time. So, yeah, it's, you know, pottery. I'm going to be a jeweler next time. Because jewelry is nice and light, but pottery is heavy. So I have to schlep. I've got to pack it up. I've got to schlep it in. I got to set it up. And then tomorrow, hopefully I won't have much to pack, but I'll have to pack it back up and bring it on home, what I do have left. So I have a lot
of
things, so I expect I'll have a bit.
I was going to say, like, anybody listening to this has got to have some idea. Like, when you're getting a mug, it is not like some mass-produced little cup or glass mold, whatever that you get. This person has to figure out even sort of like almost like a tang for a sword when you're making a mug. They have to figure out the weight that that handle can hold and how you're attaching it so that it remains intact the entire life of the piece. Because when I made a mug for my dad, I was so proud making that when I was back in 6th or 7th grade. Mm-hmm. I figured my dad, he's a big guy. He's like 6 foot something. He had big hands. So I thought, I'm making my dad a nice big mug. When I gave my dad the mug on Father's Day back many, many, many moons ago, he picked it up and he said, well, that's beautiful, honey. That's beautiful. He said, now I just gonna need 2 hands to hold it up. I mean, he was this huge guy.
It's,
you know,
true.
Big giant guy with muscles. So
yeah,
you're picking up your mug, even just picking it up, and the way it's balanced in your hand.
Yes.
And the comfort
Very
of it, put it up to your lips, and you're not, you know, getting what do you call that, wrist disease. What is that?
Mouth?
Yeah, what is it? Carpal tunnel. You're not getting carpal tunnel.
Oh, carpal tunnel, thank you.
Just drink your tea. That's all part of that incredible artwork and love that you all are putting into your work. Amazing.
Oh, definitely. A lot of thought. You know, my over the years that I've been making pots, a lot of things have developed. For instance, I make soap dispensers or lotion dispensers. And when I first started making them, everybody was gluing down a collar so that then another the pump could actually screw onto the collar. Well, I found that the soap would eat through any of the glue that you tried to glue down your collar with. And I don't want to sell something that isn't a good product. So I stopped making them. But then I found a man who was making dyes, metal dyes for the soap dispensers. And so I bought some, and so now when I make a lotion bottle, I will put the dye on there and I have to throw it in there, then I have to wait till it's completely dry and slowly, ever so carefully, unscrew the dye that's on there and then fire it. And if everything works out perfectly, that's something I haven't talked about, because very rarely after you've put all this time into a piece, often something might happen to it and it doesn't work out. So not only do you have all that time and energy into making the piece, but then you may not get that piece. It may not work out. You may crack, you know, there's a million things that can go wrong in the firing.
Oh.
And so you put all that time and effort into it and you don't get, you know, you can't sell it. So it's how the pottery crumbles, I think. And so, you know, it's just part of the business. But it does make you, it can be crazy making when you're just beginning. Quite frequently, a lot of your load might not be good, or might have something wrong. And then every now and then, even as a seasoned potter, something may happen and you don't get, you're lucky to get any pieces that you absolutely love or that are sellable for a sale or whatever. And of course that usually happens when you get a special order. Special orders are almost doomed to fail. In fact, I laugh at the potters in the guild that say, oh God, I've got this special order. And I just like go, oh really? You know, I like, you know, make the sign of the cross or something, because, or put juju on it, because it really it's almost doomed. In fact, a couple months ago, one of my potter friends, Elizabeth, she was making a chalice and I think a plate for a woman who was being ordained, and she had only about 4 days. So if this chalice didn't make it, she could not make another one. She did electrofire it, but so she made, for one chalice, she made six. And you know what? As life would have it, they all turned out. She has the ones that, you know, she had as backup. They're here at the sale, as a matter of fact. But but that's so unusual that it would actually turn out that, you know, I said, yeah, it's because you were prepared. And she asked me if I was firing in case, just in case something didn't work out, that, you know, she had to try to make other ones. I said, well, you got six of them. One should turn out. And they all turned out. But that's a fluke. That's a darn fluke. Yeah. So that's
I've actually cried when we opened the annealer over at the glass where I used to build glass, because what maybe I don't know about with pottery, but for glass, your piece could be perfect. You may have actually handled your glass so well that it didn't have stress fractures that were going to make it explode in the annealer, which is kind of like a kiln. It brings it to brings the glass to temperature so it doesn't crack. But somebody else's piece could shatter and then shatter everything else in the annealer. I mean, literally, you could open up that. It's like a kiln, and there'd just be shards of glass. And I had the most perfect piece I swear I'd ever made in glass. And I just all I could do is stand in the room and cry. And
yeah.
I believe it when your potters say that we're just crazy, because and that's what makes it fine art. It's not guaranteed, and it's a lot of work for a very piece, comparatively, for all the work you put into it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and when I was starting out, I remember opening my first kiln by myself, and it was a very large kiln. And I just cried, and it wasn't because things got ruined. It was because my expectations were different than my results, because I was learning. And so when I teach, I really try to caution my students about their expectations. And I did hear of a great potter, and he was learning from another great potter, Peter Volkus and Paul Solner. And Peter would, when Paul was unloading the kiln, he would have a pile for his rejects. And Peter would come by, and he would pick up, he knew the pile for the rejects, he'd pick up one, And he'd go, can I have this? And Paul, of course, would say, yeah, just get out of my sight. I don't want to see it. And then these were three guys getting their masters, two guys and Peter Volkas, and they used to hang out. And this was 60s, folks. So they would hang out in one of their cabins, and they would have their morning coffee and their afternoon beers probably and their nightly whiskey and cigars and possibly other smokables. So they hung out together quite a bit. And so the teacher, Peter, would put Paul's pot. So, and, you know, they all had their chairs, you know, how, you know, rituals are started. And so, you know, you have your special chair. And so he knew Paul's special chair, and he would put that pot in Paul's line of vision. And Paul said that he would go to see what Peter would see in that pot, that there was value in it. But his expectations, the pot didn't meet what he thought it was going to be like, but it didn't make it a bad piece. It just made it different. But living with it and looking at it, he ended up loving it. So I was in a class this winter with Todd Redmond, who's walking around. I may get him to say one quick thing. There was one lady, and we were all talking about our results in a circle, and this one lady, she had packed our pots up, and she looked like she was about ready to cry. And so I put my arm around her, and I said, can I see some of them? And I pulled them out, and I saw so much beauty there and talked to her about it. And they were sculpture, and in sculpture, you know, if it doesn't turn out the way you want, you have a couple options. You can refire it, or you can even paint sculpture. You can put paint on it. You don't have to limit yourself with just glaze and then seal that paint. But it's not something that people are going to use every day. So I was talking to her about that. And the next time I saw her, she gave me a big hug because she said her husband was like, he was oohing and aahing so many things. But her expectations got in the way. You know, and artists tend to have, you know, they know good art, they know things, and they are just have really deep feelings about stuff that doesn't turn out exactly as they wanted. You know, live with things for a while. And you know what, though? If you meet an emerging artist, that's where you're going to get good deals because they're so hard. They're very critical of themselves. And so, you know, you'll be able to definitely you know, they'll probably price things lower. And, you know, they're just starting out. When people ask me for a deal on my pottery, I'll ask them, well, how long what do you do? One time I got this answer, seriously. This man said, well, I'm a psychologist. And I said, oh, really? I said, well, how long have you been doing it? And he said, 7 years. And I said, well, I've been making pottery at the time. I think it was like 22 years. I said, well, I've been making pottery for 22 years. He asked me for a discount. And so I looked at him and I said, so if I come to you, I said, will you give me a discount? And that shut his mouth up really quickly. And then his wife proceeded to grab about 4 or 5 of my pieces and bring them up and buy them. She even winked at me because I put him in his place. It wasn't that I wanted to be rude to him, but, you know, why is my expertise, my time and energy, my learning of my craft for 22 years why would I want to sell that short when him as a 7-year practicing psychologist, and, you know, and he may be awesome. He may be better than someone, you know, time doesn't make your awesomeness, but, you know, he got it. He got it. Would he give me a discount? No, he would not give me a discount. So, you know,
I love that his wife just,
she loved it. She gave me a wink, too. She's paying for it, and she gave me a wink like, you are so good, lady. And like I said, it was, you know, it's just to educate people. That's part of the process in anything that you do in life is trying to educate people that might not see the benefit. I remember not too long ago when, and it's still to some extent, where, you know, people didn't value psychology or some mental health, practitioners. And so they would you know, they didn't think that, you know, why would I want to go talk about, you know, my life or my problems to a stranger? And, you know, that's changed through education, becoming aware of things. And that's probably why I wanted to do this show today, because, well, first of all, pottery is near and dear to my life. It's helped me to be who I am. You know, I teach high school students, and I'm always telling them that, you know, art will save you. If you're a young person and it's so hard to know who you are and know what you want to do in your life, I say do some art in any medium at all, just because it will preserve your sanity. Also, you'll meet a lot of other different quirky people. I really believe that marching to your own drummer in life is a very good thing. And Brenda had a show. You can go on the archives for any of our shows, and she talked about standing in your light, and artists tend to do that. And I just think it can be soul saving in your life to do artwork. So
well,
that's
it's
my
also,
plug for artwork.
It's also in keeping with the theme of your show, Time to Love.
Mm-hmm.
If you had allowed this gentleman to sort of subjugate your work, which is essentially an extension of who you are, then you're allowing him to subjugate you. And you're loving yourself, which is, we need to love ourselves as well as others. And it was, you know, sort of a funny story, but it also reminded him about love, even though he may not have equated it as such. And
nice.
You're loving yourself, and you actually reminded him about loving himself.
Exactly.
You
I
think
love
about
myself
it.
Enough to put tell him that. But I have a friend here right now, and Gail Allman. And Sue, I was just telling my sister about Sue yesterday as we left the sale, and how this woman actually, I'm going to get emotional, but she is definitely one of the most loving people I've ever known. This woman gives of her heart every single day. In fact, her pottery studio is called Heart and Hand. She teaches young children, and I'm sure that they just fall in love with her because she's one of the most enthusiastic people I know, and talk to her about art, and she's very enthusiastic. So I'm going to ask Sue why she does clay and what clay means to her, or anything she can think of about love and clay and how they go together for her. So it's personal. So she's going to talk on the phone and tell everybody about this.
You won't hear anything.
Hi. So I fell in love with clay probably as a child playing in the mud. And there's a part of my spirit that is like playful. And I went off to school, and college was supposed to be ever so studious. But I found myself drawn to clay, and actually drawn to the kilns, because life was all so new and there was so much exploration and probably some rebellion thrown in that I didn't get all the clay pieces made, but my friend did. So the two of us would fill a kiln, and every time I didn't have a piece, because my pieces were fewer in number than hers, I would have to put in a brick. But that didn't seem to stifle me in terms of my love of clay. And we'd fire our kilns, and we'd have critiques, and left school to become artists and clay makers and share. And I was a member of the guild as a bisker, which is an apprentice position. And I realized that, again, that love of kilns nurtured me. And then I continued on, and now as an almost 60-year-old ancient human being, I'm actually working hand building and doing things that I fell in love with in sculpture my second or third semester of college. And I think that I would tell people to try things at all times of their life. And when kids come to my camps in the summer to do clay and to paint, I think that what I'm allowing them to do is listen to the artist's muse inside of them and realize that everyone is creative, and what their muse is telling them is different from what somebody else's muse is telling that person. So to find what it is that speaks to your own being and then make it and put it into form has been probably the touchstone of keeping me alive, flourishing, and dealing with every challenge that life throws in our direction, because life is full of everything, not just the goodness and the light, but challenge and darkness and hardship. So I find the balance of clay. Clay is like having three babies, and you know, you take care of the clay. It may come out of the kiln and be kissed by the kiln and beautiful, or it may not come out of the kiln beautiful and you readjust. So I think that's a lot of loquacious talking about clay and love, but it definitely has served me well and continues to serve me.
You're awesome.
Wasn't she awesome? You know, there's someone on the line.
They're saying that in the chat room, too.
What
a wonderful woman.
She is a wonderful woman. She is someone that maybe we don't see each other but a couple times a year, and yet the love is there. And even when we're not seeing each other, we're loving each other. So, but this is, I was telling my sister, you know, I kept introducing her to people, and then I would say, and I love this person. And it is silly because people think, oh, my God, she loves everyone. Well, you guys know I do love everyone. But these potters in my life are just very special people. I'm kind of one is running away from me. The other one's walking kind of fast. I'm going to attack Todd now because, first of all, he's attackable. But second of all, he is an amazing potter. I just took a class from him this winter in Salt, and he shared all of these secrets that he had, shared even things he was exploring, and hopefully he actually grew a little bit. And I'm going to ask him why he has been doing clay, how long he's been doing it. Maybe give a little background. We know that you're not doing it because you're getting rich, and he's also a musician, very talented musician.
Clearly not getting rich.
Yeah, exactly, clearly. But I want to, maybe he'll talk to everybody and just tell them just really quickly, like, why he's been doing pottery and how long.
Yeah, so I started doing pottery in college. I just stumbled into the ceramic studio and immediately fell in love with it because it was a wonderful combination of art and athletics, actually. And I just love the feel of the clay in my hands and trying it and the challenge of it. That's what's great about clay is there's so many challenges, whether you're dealing with making the piece or firing it. Or figuring out the glazes, there's always something new and interesting to try. And so I've been a potter now for probably 20 years or so. And it's just always a joy to come to this show and see all the great new things that people are trying and ways they're expressing themselves. And it's fun being here with Lydia. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question?
See, I told you
Hello?
Guys, everybody is...
Wait, I want to ask him a question.
Oh, she wants to ask you a question. Brenda does.
Okay. Brenda.
Okay, hi. So when you tell women that you do pottery, do they immediately start talking about that movie Ghost or anything to you?
I know the scene you're talking about, exactly.
I get that
quite a bit. I've seen that scene before. I've never sat through that whole movie. I should probably do that sometime since people ask me about it all the time. But that's a fun scene, isn't it?
That's funny. Anyway, I just thought I'd ask that because, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
But thank you for sharing. That was totally, I love how you said that. It's part, it reminded him of sports and art at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, well,
which I wouldn't have thought of, but it makes sense with pottery.
It definitely does, and I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of sports, but there's juggling. There's definitely athleticism. You know, I pick up these shelves when I'm building up my shelves in my kiln, and they're too deep. They're 12 inches by 24 inches, and you know that's big, and they weigh about 25 pounds. And I have to lean over a shelf and put them on the stilts. And it really works my core and helps me to keep my core very, very strong. And I love it. But, you know, when I'm done doing it, I'm like going, okay, I'm going to have to get an apprentice when I'm probably about 100. So, and hopefully it'll be a buff guy that works with his shirt off. I've always said this, so I'm going to have to look for him in a few years. Yeah, a really good-looking guy. Because, you know, I'll be 100, but I won't be dead. So
that's
I'll
right.
keep everything I
never
and
did.
He'll load my kiln for me.
There he goes, sweetie.
25-pound shelves. Yeah, that's my plan for the future. You know, some people have insurance. I have fantasies.
which will be our manifestations very shortly.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I have another Potter friend who is walking around taking pictures, and she probably will post some of them. So they'll be on the Boulder Potters Guild. So you can go. We have a new website, boulderpottersguild.com. And so you can go on there. We are putting up our artist pages, so be patient with us. We're just getting our artist pages put up. I got some professional photographs made, and we'll have pictures up. But and some potters, you know, will ship, and you could contact them through the website. And so you'll be able to maybe buy a piece that was in the show or that will be in a future show. I'm actually going to end the show today.
Okay.
It has been an hour. Boy, it's flown by. I know. I thought I'd talk to more potters, but some of them were running away as I was trying to catch them. You know, potters are either outgoing like me, or they're kind of introverted, or they feel they might not have public speaking skills or something. But, you know, you got to hear a few of them. And these are people, everyday people. You know, Todd is married to a beautiful woman, and he has two boys. You know, most of us have, Sue has two children, a boy and a girl. We're just regular people. We're like your next door neighbors. So when I advertise the show on Facebook, a lot of times the Boulder Potters Guild show, I do say, you know, buy local, buy from an artist, buy art, and you're also supporting your next door neighbor. In Boulder,
yeah.
I kiddingly say that you can throw a stick in any direction and you're either going to hit a health food store or a potter or some kind of artist, because there's so many of them around. So it's really true that if you do that, you're going to probably, if you throw a stick, you will hit an artist or a health food store. And that's the truth. But you guys, thanks so much for being there. Thanks for Nina and Mel and Lennis in the chat room, and Nina for manning the chat room, and Brenda for being there always to help me. I really appreciate you. And I'm just very grateful. I'm hoping I don't have much to pack up tomorrow, but you never do know, you know. And what I do have will just, it'll be good, because then I'm going to not have to work so hard for the next show. And I am going to be in a show. I'm going to be in a second sale, or an imperfect sale, they call it. Julie's imperfect sale, and it's kind of fun. You know, our pieces that, you know, might have a slight flaw, but they're reusable, which that's everything in my cupboard right now. But, you know, so you can get some good, better deals that way. So people that might feel like, you know, they can't afford coming out to the Boulder Potters Guild, although believe me, we've got things for $7 and $5. You know, there's something for everyone here. So I'm going to end with my favorite song in the universe. And, you know,
okay,
if you're wondering,
cue that up.
Thank you. And if you're wondering what time it is, let me tell you, it's time to love. Until next week, I will see you next week live from San Francisco. I love you all. Have a great day.
Love you, Lydia.
Love you, too. Thank you, guys.
Nothing you can do. Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game.
Easy.
Nothing.